Hi, welcome to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. In episode 17, season 1, I spoke with the innovative cellist, improviser, and composer Peggy Lee, who is a bandleader and sought-after collaborator in Vancouver, Canada. Peggy collaborates frequently with Ron Samworth and Tony Wilson, and with her husband, drummer Dylan Vanderschiff, as well as with many other longtime musical associates. She also leads or co-leads a number of musical projects, the Peggy Lee Band, Film and Music, Waxwing, and more. She's collaborated extensively in theater and dance with different companies and artists. Peggy's a recipient of the Freddie Stone Award for Integrity and Innovation in Music, and she was awarded a Jesse Richardson Theater Award for Outstanding Composition. At the beginning of the episode, she played an incredible solo cello improv for us, and as a separate bonus episode, you can hear my improv with her as well. We discussed her path from classical cello to the development of her uniquely creative life in music. All of these episodes are available in video format. The link is in the description. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I speak with a really interesting range of musicians about their lives in music. Hey, Peggy Lee, cellist, improviser in Vancouver. So thanks for agreeing to do some improvisation for us at the beginning of this conversation.
No problem.
Your cello to the listeners who are listening to the podcast version. For this, it'd be worth going over to the video version just to see all the extended techniques that Peggy's doing to achieve such a palette of sound and color. So you've carved out such an interesting career for yourself. I want to talk about lots of things, but I'll start by introducing you, by saying I was reading about you and noticing in 2018, I believe you were hired in 8 acts over 10 days of the Vancouver Jazz Festival. I found this in a print article.
Okay.
Just do tons of collaborations. You're very well known in Vancouver as an improviser. And I hate these labels, but a lot of what you do is considered free jazz or creative improvisation.
Free improvisation is probably more accurate because a lot of people would not consider that jazz.
Right, what you just did.
But yeah, I do play in a lot of groups with that combine free playing and also composition.
Yeah.
And also in my own groups, I write with the musicians, and also leave a lot of space for different strategies for improvisation. So sometimes it's completely free, and sometimes it's over vamp or chord progression or whatever.
I've been enjoying your new album put out by your trio Waxwing, Flicker Down.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll put links to things, Bandcamp and whatever else, in the description on this episode for people who are curious. Yeah. So that group is, you want to talk about what that group is?
Sure. That's guitarist Tony Wilson and a saxophone player, John Bentley. And pretty much when I started to improvise, one of the first players I played with was Tony and his group. And that really gave me kind of the incentive and courage, I guess, to try also writing. Because I found in the classical world, it's just like you either play or you compose. It's very, in school at least, you know, I knew people that were forbidden to do double majors in performance and composition. Maybe that's changing. I hope so. I'm sure it is, but
I'm curious about that. So their teachers were basically like, you need to practice 6 hours a day, so don't be bothering with composition, or?
No, even the school, just the administration, you know, you can't do both. You have to choose. Mm. And I think that's pretty sad. I would have loved to have been able to explore composition. Mm-hmm.
So you did a straight ahead performance cello education at U of T, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
And then when you went to Banff and you're able to you're in a string quartet and you're able to play with different players. Can you talk about that experience?
It wasn't even just playing with different players. It was they had something called InterArts at the time. Mm-hmm. I think it was, and they really encouraged cross-disciplinary collaborations. So I would play with a sculpture or an art installation, and I just kind of realized that I liked to improvise, even though I didn't really have a vocabulary at the time, or certainly no jazz training, but I was pretty inspired by seeing, like, my program ended, I stayed and handed out the towels and keys at the pool. And that summer, of course, the jazz program came through under Dave Holland. Mm-hmm. And I was just mesmerized every night by what the musicians were doing there. So I definitely, like, was gravitating towards something other than classical at that time, but I didn't exactly know what. Still don't really.
And you did a like an intensive technique class with Martha Gershevsky.
Yeah. Have you heard of her?
I hadn't, and then I looked her up and I was curious. And you know, I do a lot of teaching, so I'm always curious, like, in the idea of a pure technique class. What was that like from a string player perspective?
It wasn't pure tech. I mean, we worked on music as well, but she had, the first time I met her, she was doing a summer program in Atlanta, Georgia called Cellomania. Mm-hmm. And it was, like long days, 6 days a week for 6 weeks or something, just working really hard on her method and playing for each other constantly and just getting over any nerves or, you know, performance anxiety, because we just were playing all the time for each other. And I liked it so much, I ended up taking a break from my degree at U of T and going down and just studying with her privately for 2 years.
So what are the main things you got out of working with her?
Well, that there's a way to reach whatever you feel like. Like, you just felt like if you worked, it wasn't about talent or starting when you're three or any of these things. It was just a very clear method to get where you want to go, I guess. And it was really fun. There was a lot of joy and humor.
Mm-hmm. And did she create the same kind of class atmosphere during the year as that intensive summer program?
She tried. There was a few of us that came down, and we all had access to rooms at Georgia State University, and she would do a weekly class and then like a weekly cello choir rehearsal and then individual lessons. But she wasn't, yeah, it was obviously, it wasn't as intense. We were mostly on our own during the week.
Did you play for people? Was that kind of camaraderie?
Well, for the class, like, yeah, the weekly class, we'd all play for each other.
Talking about nerves, I'm curious, because you also are involved in notated, like, contemporary music, and you're a founding member of Standing Wave.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel different performing, you know, when you have to be completely true to what's often very complicated parts? Is that a different kind of nerves than when you're up there improvising?
I guess so. I mean, I think nerves are nerves. I've kind of avoided and just doing solo written contemporary music. I usually just say, no, I don't do that. I'd rather improvise. It feels like all the work that is put into that for one performance is kind of too overwhelming for me. But I'm a little more relaxed about improvising than some of the written stuff. But in a group like Standing Wave, there's just such a like camaraderie, and it's really fun. So
can you tell us about the group and when it got started, since you've been with it for a long time?
I'm not good with dates, but I moved here in 1989 to Vancouver. So shortly after that, there was a group, it was sort of a society, I guess, called Pro Musica. Mm-hmm. That was a group of composers, and they actually were the ones that had the idea of starting a contemporary music ensemble to play their music. Mm-hmm. So the original players were François Houle on a clarinet and myself. It was a quartet, piano, Lei Chuan Tan, and a percussionist, Laurie Lister. So they put us together. Some of us didn't even know each other. And we did some concerts. And then at a certain point, we just sort of decided to go on our own away from that society and added violin. And then after a while, added flutes. So it's been that way for a long time now, the six of us. And we commissioned, and Becky, who you know, Becky Whitling, she's taken it on as pretty much artistic director and conceiving of projects. So recently we did this recording project, which is called 20th Century Remix. Did she tell you at all about that? It's commissioning composers to find a piece from the 20th century, and it could be of any genre, and then writing a new piece, creating a new piece out of that. Mm-hmm. For us. So yeah, there's been great projects and great commissions over the years, and a little bit of touring. We played in Montreal for one of the new music festivals a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. And with your big, it's not a big band, but the Peggy Lee Band is pretty big, isn't it? Like a
octave? That's an 8-piece band. Yeah. I have 2 8-piece bands and a 10-piece.
So that just has such a beautiful sonority. Can you tell us the makeup of the band, with trombone and?
Yeah, that the Peggy Lee Band, that was the first band I put together, and that was fun for me because I had just started to write music, and I was at the time, I think I was bringing together musicians that hadn't played together. There were some jazz players, Brad Turner on trumpet. Yeah, actually, it was originally a sextet, so we didn't have two guitars and we didn't have the tenor. But Brad Turner on trumpet and Jeremy Berkman, this beautiful classical player, it was really nice to hear them. I sort of imagined that, and it's worked. Yeah, they've ended up doing a lot of together over the years, but I think this might have been their first time working together. And electric bass I thought would be good just for clarity. I love the bass, I love, you know, acoustic bass, but I thought with the cello it'd be nice to have something that didn't interrupt with the frequencies too much or compete too much. So I had put electric bass and electric guitar, drums, my husband Dylan. And I don't know, we've done maybe five or so albums. We've done quite a few records and they've all been inspired by different things. And I'm going to record with them, hopefully in the next year, a lot of music that's sort of an ode to my family. My parents both passed in the last few years, so written, most of it was written up in the Georgian Bay. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of those tunes, I haven't listened to all your albums, but a lot of the music from that band. So it's interesting to me, and I'm curious about the form and any kind of structure you come up with, because there'll be like a pretty straight ahead ballad with, you know, beautiful like harmonies, and then it just veers off. And it's often really unexpected, I find, you know, the language. Right. Are you writing lead sheets for people? Like, what's the compositional sort of product that you hand out?
I usually have parts. I usually just write out all the parts, but sometimes there's occasionally I write something that's more just a piano score or something, and then we find our way through it. And arranging, a lot that can be quite collaborative too. Like I might have the idea for the tune, but where it goes and how it returns is open to discussion.
Are you finding that you're writing at a piano quite a lot, or what's your method?
I was, yeah. I mean, my first instrument, I guess, would be piano and then guitar before cello. So I've written both on piano and guitar mostly. Recently, I don't have access to a piano anymore, so it's interesting. I'm writing a little bit more, trying to think of ideas on cello. Mm-hmm.
Are you just doing like pencil and paper, or do you use a MIDI software?
Well, I start with pencil and paper, but also sometimes I just record onto my phone. I've got an app that I can do multi-track.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll do something, you know, just by ear and then figure it out later.
What app do you like to use for that?
It's called Spire.
And I wanted to ask you about your sort of development as a improviser more, because I had read that you worked a lot with the dancers at the beginning when you first moved out to Vancouver.
That's right, yeah. I think that was my first, definitely my first foray into improvisation in Vancouver was with dancers. And it just felt comfortable right from the start. And I've done a lot of that over the years. And now, I mean, especially at the beginning, there's quite a strong improvising dance community here too. So it's kind of a natural fit with the creative music scene and the dance scene. And, but over the years, I've also worked with dancers and I've actually composed pieces for shows and stuff like that.
So does it work that you provide the music and then they choreograph, or is there a bit more collaboration? Are they telling you certain parameters?
It varies really. Sometimes I think one of the first times someone used some of my music and it was already recorded, so there was no collaboration really, but, another time a poet commissioned a dancer and myself to work off one of his poems. So we sort of worked separately and then together on that. So there's a lot of different approaches.
Do you write for, like, have you written solo pieces for other instruments or like duos and stuff separate from your bands?
I've barely written for things that I'm not part of. Like usually it's a band that I play in and then I know all the musicians and we work it out together. But there's been, I did write a solo for a cellist, Becky Wenham, a few years ago, and then just recently at violinist Mark Desturbe. That was something, I think, he's part of a group called the Turning Point Ensemble here, and they reallocated all their funding during the pandemic to just create solos instead of putting on concerts. So mm-hmm. I did that. That's going to be made into a little film.
And you'd mentioned your husband, Dylan, who's a percussionist. Mm. And he's also a scholar who's doing work. I was reading about like the nature of like why musicality is important to humans. It seems like he's really probing some interesting ideas.
It's great. I think he just, he couldn't just play drums and be fulfilled. So he went on a journey. He started doing liberal arts degree when our kids were little, and then from there did a couple of master's degrees and then a PhD and then a postdoc. And he's just written a book that's going to be published by MIT Press. So, I think he has lots more to offer than just teaching drums. Mm-hmm. So he's doing great right now in Melbourne.
And he's played a lot of your groups over the years.
Yeah. We started playing together. That's kind of how we really met in a way. That I told you about Tony Wilson. I started to play with him and another guitar player, Ron Samworth, at the very same time, just asked me to join their groups, their bands. And Dylan was part of both of those bands. And then I can't remember when, but we made a record, just the two of us, called These Are Our Shoes. And it was all improvised, short little pieces, but went in a whole bunch of different directions. So it was really fun. I just felt very comfortable immediately. So. Mm-hmm.
Do you sometimes play on electric cello?
I mean, I use amplification, but I don't have an electric instrument. I don't play through effects or anything like that.
Yeah.
At least not yet. I'm not saying never, but there's a lot in the acoustic instrument.
Oh yeah. No, and it's such a different sound really. I mean, you can't produce the same sound when it's,
I just feel like people that work with like effects and pedals and stuff, that's a whole other journey. And
I was curious, do you teach?
No, I don't really. I mean, I think I kind of feel bad about that because Martha was such a great teacher. And so when I first moved here and, just was out on my own, I was teaching a bit, but I never really got very far. I don't know if students quit or I think that's what happened. So I just, at a certain point, I wasn't developing any kind of method for teaching. So then there's a great cellist that lives a couple blocks from here, a great teacher. And so whenever anybody asks for lessons, I just refer them to her. But then occasionally someone will want to, work on improvising. And I'm very open to just playing. I don't really know how to teach improvisation, but I'll have people over and we'll just play. I'm happy to do that. But
yeah, that's what I was curious about, actually, that if you were teaching, were you teaching improv?
Although the last few years, I don't know if you knew Jerry Grinelli. He just passed, a great drummer. He had a workshop that coincided with the Halifax Jazz Festival every year. It's called the Creative Music Workshop. And so the last few years he had invited me to join the faculty there. And that I felt at first I was a little reticent. I don't really teach and all that, but it was a very welcoming environment and musicians of all ages and all genres and all, levels of experience mm-hmm. and everything. And they just try to make music. Like, it doesn't really matter if you play that or you've only been playing a week or they put everybody into ensembles, and then over the course of the week, we would just create whatever our music is for that week, given who's there. So I did enjoy that. That was a fun way to teach.
Yeah. And in terms of your daily practice, or just your general sort of, like, you need to have technique to play whatever you're playing. Do you have certain routines you go to, or certain things you like to play?
Yeah, I have I do have a sort of regiment of scales that Brad Turner, the trumpet player, was talking about. Years ago, I wanted to just learn as much as I could from him about more like playing over changes and things like that, improvising that way. And so I've had these scales for many years, and I pretty much play them in a different key every day. But also not just play the scales, but really try and play with them and make phrases and go back. And so it's just not up and down, but it's sort of back and forth, and trying to make some kind of music out of it also. And yeah, just different, just kind of honing in on facility in certain areas that might feel awkward. I usually do that. There was a period where I was playing Bach every day. I haven't been doing that in a while, but comes and goes.
So you studied a little bit of jazz sort of harmony on your, over the years?
A little bit, yeah. So with Brad, it was just a couple lessons. And then more recently, I went to a guitar player, Bill Kuhn. Yeah, so I took some lessons with him. I mean, I don't feel super confident doing that, but I also don't want to just be doing patterns or, you know, shapes. Like I do want, I am trying to somehow like hear music. And so it's a slow process, but I think, yeah, it's just finding one's voice is kind of is the ticket.
So whatever type of improv you're doing, are you hearing it right before you play it, or you sometimes take yourself by surprise?
Yeah, sometimes it's more of a physical thing, and then hearing it after the physical thing has happened, and then working off that. Like when we just, what I just did, I really, there was obviously no plan, but you do also find this is your language, and you gravitate to things quite easily.
There's any upcoming recording projects, or?
I just did a recording of one of my friends, Cole Schmidt. He has a band called Sick Boss. So I just did that for the last 3 days. And also just before that, there is a new group called Beatings Are in the Body, and it's vocalist from Montreal, Erica Angel, and pianist from here, Roisin Adams. So we spent 3 days in the studio in June. So there's lots of projects that are going to be coming out. And actually, the drummer I just mentioned before he passed, he and a great saxophone player, Michael Blake, and a pianist, Chris Jestrin, and I, we had recorded a quartet in Banff with Jerry. So we had planned to tour and everything, but I think that'll definitely come out anyway, just because it was his last thing that he recorded, as far as I know.
And we talked a little bit about like structure and different types of improv. I'm curious how you lay things out for people, like with your compositions and giving people space.
Well, I like to just mix it up, really. Like I love hearing great players play over chord changes, so I always include that in the mix. But I guess sometimes I'll want to just as you say, like break away from the composition and do have a little episode that's into it of itself. But and it's different every time, obviously, those kind of interludes. That appeals to me. And yeah, all kinds of, I can't really think of examples, but I just like to explore ways that will give the musicians an opportunity to express where they are at the moment. It could be a vamp or a duo, mixing it up, you know, just pairing people in different combinations. I recently wrote a piece for a big band, and it was called the Hard Rubber Orchestra. I don't know if you've heard of them. John Cornfield is the leader of that. So that was fun. And of course, they're originally supposed to perform it live, and then that was canceled. So John arranged to make it into a recording project. But a lot of people had to do their parts remotely from their homes. So it was pretty, at first it was like, it's pretty dead. But but then when we added the improvisers, it just came to life, which is just, it was just so beautiful. Like they just surprised me, and yeah, I was pretty happy. They made a little, then he commissioned a video artist to make a video for that. So it's mm-hmm. it's nice. It'll be kind of something that lasts. And eventually mm-hmm. they'll play it live as well, but it was a nice solution to the situation.
Just in terms of like mentors and people who've really inspired you over the years, are there people you think people should listen to or that have really helped you or taught you certain lessons?
Really, I mean, all the musicians that I play with are my, that's where I get my inspiration. And just for instance, like you were talking about the Waxwing record, most of the pieces on that were written by Tony Wilson. Mm-hmm. And I play in a lot of his groups and collaborate with him. And his writing is really special. It's very soulful. Yeah.
And a lot of these groups are very big, and I imagine the logistics in terms of paying people is hard for actual gigs. So a lot of it's just recording, or is there a certain, or one-off performances, or?
Yeah. Did you say paying people is hard?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you just have a trio, it's easier to get a gig at a club. But if it's like, oh, we have a 10-piece band, right?
Yeah, those bands are really kind of special, like concerts. We couldn't really play like in a restaurant or anything like
that.
But there have been over the years some venues that have been really instrumental in nurturing our scene here, which are artist-run collectives. So I think the first one that I was called the Glass Slipper, and then that burnt down, and there was a collective called 1067, and then there was one called Merge, and currently there's a place down in Chinatown called 8 East, and I was, until the whole Australia thing, I was part of the collective down there, and so yeah, we could just put on shows, whatever, you know, to charge the door. It wasn't really about the money. I mean, I don't think we ever made back the money in gigs, but we had a space that we mm-hmm. could play in and, you know, develop the music. So that was the main thing.
Seems like Vancouver's pretty unique, but special in that it seems very fertile for a lot of improvisers. And
it sure has been for me. You know, I grew up in Toronto, and because I was also just in the classical realm, so there may have been things that were going on that I wasn't aware of. I'm sure there were. And I know that now when I go back, there's a lot going on there too. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, just coming out here, nobody knew me as a classical player, so I didn't get hired for anything, which ended up helping me find something else to do, right? Well, no, that wasn't really. I was looking for something else to do. Mm-hmm. So it was right for me to be here.
Is there advice you'd give young players sort of starting on the similar path, like leaving the classical world and finding themselves in a different corner of the music world?
Well, it's just really just doing it and just playing with all kinds of people or, you know, all kinds of different artists. And then you kind of find what you feel is your strength.
Yeah.
But yeah, going out and hearing music, that's a thing that is sometimes discouraging for me. Like when Stanaway plays, like, where are all the composition students?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're busy doing homework or something, but yeah. And hopefully this whole year and a half will make people think twice about staying home.
Yeah, I think so. The pandemic's been incredibly hard, but especially for freelance musicians. Do you have any feelings like looking back at the beginning of the pandemic, we had no idea if vaccines would be able to be developed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I didn't know it was going to take this long because I thought it was going to be faster. But yeah, I mean, I felt lucky also. I was able to do some recording from home and getting commissions to write for people. That also was, you know, kept me busy. Did you do a lot of like Zoom shows?
I did some Zoom shows. I mean, not in a big way. My husband's a violinist, so we did some duo things just for fun, but we didn't have the right setup. Like, we didn't know enough about how to do things properly, thinking back on it.
Right.
And with the National Arts Center, like, I play in that orchestra, so we did a lot of outreach educational stuff through Zoom, like mock auditions and coachings and that sort of thing. And on my own, I did a lot of my own outreach projects. I did master classes for people for free, just people all over the world, and met up with different people and some pedagogy workshops I came up with, and just kind of connecting with people, just trying to have a purpose to every day.
Nice.
And I started this YouTube channel and more recently started this podcast. So it's been really interesting talking to all kinds of different musicians. And
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to this today.
Yeah, good to meet you.
Season 1 of this podcast had 20 episodes, and season 2 continues with a really interesting mix of musicians talking about their lives and careers with perspectives on overcoming challenges, finding inspiration and connection through a life so enriched with music. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about each new episode.